And joining me in studio this morning is Dr. Stephen Greer. Dr. Greer is a medical doctor. He lives in both the Washington, D.C. area and in Charlottesville, Virginia. He is the director and founder of the Disclosure Project. Let me even put it this way. Over the course of thousands of radio programs and interviews in a lifetime, he's one of the guys that just always really, really happy to get a chance to talk to, because I take him very, very seriously. He's a very committed individual, very intelligent, and I've learned a lot from him over the years. Been a guest on the Charles Goyette Show 4 or 5 times, I think, in the past. And this is the first time he's been here in studio, because he'll be speaking here at ASU. More about that coming up. Dr. Stephen Greer, director and founder of the Disclosure Project, good to meet you, and thank you for coming by.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Let's get the woo-woo stuff out of the way first, okay? This is all about UFOs and government secrecy and stuff like that.
Ostensibly. But in reality, it's about the future of our planet and what kleptocracy is going to hide from us, the new energy, propulsion, technology systems that could get us off of fossil fuels and into a whole new chapter of human history. UFOs, yes. The fact that they exist, certainly anyone with an IQ over mud who looks at the evidence knows they do. However, the real story here is what's going on with this secrecy, how is it being maintained, and the big trillion-dollar question is why.
Dr. Greer, there are people listening to this show right now that say, wait a minute, I have an IQ over mud, and I don't believe any of this hokum about UFOs and Space Brothers. This is stuff from the Weekly World News.
Right, exactly. That's exactly the counterintelligence spin they'd like you to believe. You know, I have a document from 1953 from the CIA that's an official document, uncontested, that mentioned using Disney Studios and other outlets to spin the subject into the silly season of Little Green Men, because they knew how important this was. We have, in the Disclosure Project, identified over 400 top-secret military officials, including generals, cosmonauts, astronauts, colonels, senior FAA officials, who have gone on the record, name, rank, and serial number, about what they have personally seen. We have over 2,000 government documents that have been uncontested. We have the entire KGB file from the former Soviet Union dealing with this. We have over 3,000 cases where these objects have landed and left physical evidence that civilians have been able to acquire. This is not a question of speculation. Do these exist? They absolutely do. And I think that the mass media, the quote, big media, is very corrupt on this matter. If you look at this recent Peter Jennings special that they did, about 90% of it was disinformation and fluff. So the masses never get the truth about this subject. And the reason it's made so silly is because it's really so damn important. It's an extremely important issue.
Well, if true, it is absolutely the most important. It outweighs all the others. It makes like a war in Iraq just laughably insignificant. It makes all the things we talk about, the Michael Jackson trial or bankruptcy bills and stuff, it makes all of this stuff pale in comparison if indeed there is any truth to all of this secrecy, UFO cover-up stuff.
Well, there isn't. What I tell people is that, look, I'm a medical doctor. Emergency trauma is my field. You know, it's not like I'm a psychiatrist. No offense to those guys. But, I mean, you know, a hard kind of science guy. My uncle was the senior engineer who designed the lunar module that took Neil Armstrong to the moon. So our family's been very connected to aerospace and to government over the years. And what I point out to people is that if you go to Washington, and I'm there a lot, and you meet with people on the joint staff or you meet with members of Congress, they are quietly and behind the scenes very concerned about this issue. But it rarely breaks over into the media, into the public domain. And I think that we have to question what part of our democracy is still alive. And I tell people that the worst part of our democracy right now is the Fourth Estate. Except for folks like you, most of the media is so enormously corrupt that it really makes the corporate scandals of Enron look like child's play.
You are so right. If they're not corrupt, they're simply brain dead. It's been unbelievable. All right. What is the in teasing your appearance here, I said, you know, that I guess Dr. Greer is the kind of guy that his dad said when he was growing up, if you want something done right, do it yourself. Because all these people have called for the government to reveal what it knows all these years, and the government never reveals it. So Stephen Greer and the Disclosure Project said, well, we'll go to the people, the individuals, and just privatize this. And that's what you've done. What is the best evidence that there's something to all this UFO secrecy business?
Well, I think people have to look at the weight of it, and I think you should go at disclosureproject.org, which is our website, is .org, disclosureproject.org, because it's a nonprofit. We have there on the site testimony from a number of these military witnesses. We have government documents that are undisputed. And there's much other evidence. And if you were to look at one single case, I'd say there are 100 individual cases that in anybody looking at this scientifically would say, this is dispositive. This is the proof. And it's not just one. And this is what's so amazing. Jay Hallen Hynek, who used to run Project Blue Book for the Air Force, said, in reality, we have an embarrassment of riches, and I'm quoting. So there's an enormous amount of evidence, hard evidence, that this is, in fact, real and not fictitious. For example, I have a government document from Canada that was inadvertently declassified in the 70s. It's a top-secret document, and it describes a group in Canada that was trying to find out in 1951 what the United States had on this subject. And it concludes, and I'm paraphrasing here, but we have this in our book, Disclosure, and you can get it and read it. This document states that UFOs exist. It just states it. There's a high-level group headed up by Dr. Vannevar Bush, who developed the atomic bomb and ran the Manhattan Project to see how the modus operandi is actually working with these things technologically, and that it was the most classified subject in the U.S. government, exceeding the secrecy surrounding the development of the hydrogen bomb. Now, this was the year before we detonated the first H-bomb at Bikini Atoll. My point here is that these are undisputed official documents. And in any other area, it would be taken to be, good God, this is real. But because of the spin that's been marched out to the public about, as you mentioned, the Weekly World or whatever these things are, the silly season of, an alien swooped down.
Jay Leno jokes and David Letterman.
Exactly. And there's this constant barrage. And as a medical doctor, when I first kind of came out of the closet on this, it was really kind of tough because initially I got some ribbing, as you can imagine. Thank God I was already well established as a good doc at my hospital. But then eventually I started having doctors and other scientists and come up to me and say, my family knew about this, or I had an uncle who was at this Air Force base when they were looking at some of these materials that we had retrieved from an extraterrestrial vehicle that we got way back. And little by little, we started with a few of these insiders, and it exploded to now over 400.
Well, people do seem to be coming out of the closet. I mean, I guess that's what the Disclosure Project's all about, to give them a place to go with their story, huh?
Right, exactly. And this is why, DisclosureProject.org, our website, has become a key thing. We've had pushing something like 10 million people on that site. And what I say to people is that we're trying to go around these blockades that are in our democracy for information to flow, both through the media, through the website, and what have you, because when people understand that this secrecy is being run not through official sanction of either White House or congressional or legal control, that it's actually a rogue, covert group. If you look at what Eisenhower, who was no liberal, I mean, he was a five-star conservative Republican general, he's the one, when he left office, who said, beware the military-industrial complex, because if we don't watch it, it will begin to erode our liberties and will be a threat to our democracy. Now, I'm paraphrasing, but his actual speech is in our video and is on our website. And what I point out to people is that I have a witness who was an aide to Eisenhower in the late 50s and early 60s, around the time of the end of his administration, who personally hand-delivered encounters between our Air Force pilots and these UFOs to the president. And he has told me, and this is a Brigadier General Stephen Lovkin, who is also an attorney in North Carolina. He was a young man at that time in 1959, 1960. He says Eisenhower was livid that there were these enormous corporate and financial groups that had taken over this issue, and he knew he was being lied to. He knew that there were high-tech R&D efforts going on. He knew that there were many events that he was not getting reports on, and Eisenhower had a personal interest in this, and he was very upset. So no one ever knew why Eisenhower made that speech, his swan song, when he left office in January 1961. Just as Jack Kennedy was coming in. But it was because he had personally been, quote, stabbed in the back. And I'm quoting Brigadier General Lovkin. And you can see his testimony on our website or in the book Disclosure that we have out that has about 600 pages of
transcripts. Well, it's pretty disturbing if something's going on in the federal government with federal money that the president can't even get a peek at. And I guess that Clinton encountered the same sort of thing. Didn't he dispatch Webb Hubble to get to the bottom of it?
Yes, and one of the things, of course, that a lot of people don't realize, I'll talk about this Friday night, I'm giving a lecture at ASU at Murdoch Lecture Hall at 8 o'clock. But before that, at 6:30, we're going to show an hour-long summary of these witnesses' testimony if people want to come. I'm going to talk specifically about what the presidents have known, the ones that I've met with and the ones that are on our team. For example, I personally was the guy who briefed President Clinton's first CIA director. People think this is silly stuff. You don't get a three-hour meeting with a sitting director of Central Intelligence unless they are deeply interested and concerned about this.
You briefed James Woolsey.
Yes, I personally
now,
briefed.
Now, this $30, $40 billion of intelligence, and you, with your privatized investigation into this stuff, you have to go brief the head of the CIA?
Yes, and this I didn't believe initially. My point of contact to him, who is head of a think tank in Washington, sent me a FedEx and said, Woolsey and the president are trying to find out on this matter, and they know they're being lied to. You're going to be the first person to do a sit-down briefing with him. I almost fell out of my chair. Here I am, an emergency doctor, rattling around running this busy ER in North Carolina, and I'm being called to go. So my wife and I, on December 13, 1993, fly up to Washington, and we have, under cover of a dinner party, spend 3 hours with this sitting CIA director and his wife, who was head of the National Academy of Sciences, chief operating officer.
Would they tell you to keep this under your hat?
No, not at all.
What did Woolsey say?
He was visibly shaken. He was almost in tears. He says, this is a disaster. We do not have access. This is out of control. I gave him a document that described what, as an executive action, the president and he ought to do to get control of this. And he looked at me. He says, how do we disclose what we don't have access to? It was a very poignant moment. I'm quoting on that. Now, I think that people have to understand that there is this sort of rogue element and is highly mobbed up. I mean, if you want to talk about a RICO, it's like the largest mobbed up racketeering influence entity on the planet. And it's got tentacles into SAIC, Lockheed, Northrop, EG&G, Raytheon and E-Systems. I can name you the corporations and the facilities and the subsections of those facilities where this is going on. I met with Congressman Cox of California, a conservative Republican, Orange County guy, rising star, Harvard educated. He looked at me. He says, I have never been able to get information on this. I have no doubt it's going on even in my district here in Orange County with some of these big corporations. Where are these facilities? So if you look at the book we put together, Disclosure, which you can get at disclosureproject.org, I have in there an assessment where I list the specific facilities and sub-facilities and corporations that are involved. And how did I get that list? By finding insiders and whistleblowers in every one of them.
And we're going to see all this stuff at ASU this weekend.
Right.
All right. Dr. Stephen Greer, listen, I'm not going to monopolize the conversation, although I would like to, but I want to be fair about this and open the phones. The phone number is 602-230-TALK. It is 602-230-8255. Dr. Stephen Greer, the Disclosure Project. I'll tell you more about the event. It's a Friday night disclosure video and a lecture on Friday night at ASU. And then on Saturday is a big deal. On Saturday, a workshop and a two-hour disclosure video. All sounds perfectly interesting to me. I'm going to be there for sure on Friday night. I'll get to introduce Dr. Greer on Friday night at Arizona State University. The disclosureproject.org is their web address. It is my view that in the course of these investigative commissions like the 9/11 Commission and more, in congressional hearings, we really never get anything.
That's right, and you can look back all the way to the 60s when Donald Rumsfeld helped keep the UFO matter secret when they were looking into it in 1968 when the hearings that Congressman Brown of California, and also Gerald Ford, as it turns out, from Michigan, held on the subject. I have documents that implicate Senator John Warner of Virginia and also Rumsfeld as key points who kept that spun into something that was ineffectual.
So what good would new hearings do? I mean, it's the same old story.
It would be the same old story unless the public and the media, honestly, covered what we've uncovered. In other words, if you go into a hearing with dozens of senior military people, and that's what we have, and that's what people are going to see tomorrow night at ASU, testimony from these sorts of people, it's very hard for them to say, oh, we're not going to let this brigadier general or this air traffic control manager or this FAA official. I mean, remember, one of the guys we have is John Callahan, who was the third highest ranking guy in the FAA during the Reagan years who personally investigated an enormous object that was on radar and was following a Japan Airlines 747 over the skies of Alaska. We have the radar tape. We have the transcripts of the air traffic controllers speaking. We have the transcripts of the military jets that were scrambled. When he left that position, he took the originals of all this with him and gave them to us. We have them. It is an absolute smoking gun. And this man was no low-level munchkin. He was literally the third highest-ranking man. He has come out publicly and said, people are always saying, where are the high officials who know about this? I was one of those high officials. It got covered up because Reagan science advisors and some FBI people and the CIA guys came in, had a meeting with the admiral who at the time was head of the FAA, and said, we want all your information. This event never happened. This UFO never existed. And this meeting never happened. I'm quoting now from what John Callahan has said. And they slammed the lid on it. What they didn't know is John Callahan was furious and kept the originals and gave them copies. And now we have them. So people say, gee, you know, where are the cases that really are dispositive, that absolutely prove this? I said, we have them.
Let's go to the phones. Christopher in Phoenix on Air America Phoenix. Good morning, Christopher.
Yes, thank you. I have a comment followed by a question on that. I believe the Congress or the Senate is voting on the energy bill today. That's a comment. The question is, regarding UFOs, what is the suspected propulsion system that could virtually eliminate our need for fossil fuels?
Well, if you get into it, it's a very, very good question. First of all, the energy bill is a complete fraud and a sop to the big oil companies. Secondly, the energy and propulsion systems behind these objects have to do with the extraction of energy from what is called the quantum vacuum, which is the in space around us, there's an enormous electromagnetic potential. It's estimated that a cubic centimeter of space in this room where we're speaking has enough energy in it, if you could tap into it, to run the Earth for a year.
During this show, anyway.
Yes. And so, and if it's used in a certain way, it causes a mass cancellation effect, or some would say anti-gravity effect. These sort of high physics electronics have been studied and worked out over the last 50 or 60 years. I have people who have actually worked in those projects, scientists who know a great deal about it. And we are actually heading up an effort right now through what's called SEAS, Space Energy Access Systems, to identify scientists who understand this to help us develop these technologies and get them out to the public. It's very important to understand that we, the taxpayers, have paid for this research. It's been stolen from us. This whole thing's been hijacked through these rogue interests. But in reality, we own this technology, and it should begin to come out, and we should get a dividend from the hundreds of billions of dollars that have been stolen out of the coffers of the United States and slam dunked into this insane rogue black project world.
How could you extract energy? What mechanism would extract this?
Well, I don't know if this is the place to go. First of all, I'm not a physicist. I have people on my team who can answer this much better. But I understand what you have to do is you have to perturb or disturb the normal homeostasis of what's called this zero-point energy field that's within a quantum vacuum space. And that by doing so, you can then get released from it enormous amounts of energy. That energy is there. Nobody ever asked the question, you know, the 15-billion-year-old hydrogen atoms that existed allegedly at the beginning of the Big Bang, if you buy into that theory, what has caused those subatomic particles to be running for 15 billion years? They are actually on a subatomic level fluxing in and out of this field of energy, which has been called the zero-point field of energy in mainstream physics. You can go look that up. And so what these devices do is that they actually perturb that field and extract enormous amounts of energy. What it means is that every home and business in the world can have its own energy source. We don't need a centralized electric grid. We certainly don't need oil tankers coming from the Middle East. And we don't need our boys dying over there over the last barrel of oil. It's an absolute fraud being perpetrated on the public.
The Disclosure Project, Dr. Stephen Greer. I'm Charles Goyette, 602-230-TALK.
This is the Charles Goyette Show on Air America Phoenix, 1010 Talk, KXXT.
.35 in the morning, Air America, Phoenix, 1010 Talk, KXXT, the Charles Goyette Show. Al Franken after the news at 9 o'clock. All right, Dr. Stephen Greer is here from the East Coast with us. The Disclosure Project, he's had hundreds of high-level government, military, intelligence, and corporate witnesses have come forward. He's been gathering their disclosures for years in his nonprofit research group, the DisclosureProject.org, DisclosureProject.org, and at ASU on Friday night videos and more. So let's let me be the guinea pig and presume that all this stuff has really happened. That there have been there's all this material that has been gathered. There's a Roswell crash in Dayton, Wright-Patterson. There's this, there's that, and the other. What are the forces? What are the motivations? What are the dynamics that keep this stuff from being disclosed? Why should it be hidden?
Well, in the early days, they didn't know what they had, and they didn't know what this was, and there was a lot of fear attached to that, not knowing. After they realized what they had, there was more fear, because once they realized the nature of these energy and propulsion systems and began to figure out how they worked, and they did, by the 50s, we had fully figured out the modus operandi or the technology behind these objects. They knew that it was the end of the world as we know it. You know, there's that great REM song, it's the end of the world as we know it, but I feel fine. I feel fine. But these people who own oil companies and who manage macroeconomic systems didn't feel fine, because you have to understand the nature of these technologies. By extracting energy from the space around us, it means you'd never need centralized electric utilities. Boom, there goes a $1 trillion part of the economy. You don't need oil, gas, and coal. You don't need nuclear power for energy generation, only for weapons, which we shouldn't have anyway. So you have all of these aspects of our economy and the macroeconomic geopolitical power that goes with it. So you have the mother of all interest groups here. You also have spin-off technologies. A lot of people don't realize that integrated circuits, fiber optics, night vision, some these sorts of technologies were born from the studying of this subject and came out of labs, Bell Labs, Murray Hill.
Do you have people that worked in those labs that have told you as much?
Yes, and we
like
have
fiber optics. Let's use that as
correct.
An example.
Yes.
Fiber optics, when was that developed?
Well, actually, it was studied beginning in the 40s and 50s. Now, of course, you have to understand the nature of the black world. What the public and even a top scientist might know about at MIT, unless he's in one of these compartmented cells, could be multiple generations old from what was first studied in a covert program.
Right.
And this is true of just things that the public knows about. The B-2 stealth bomber was actually being test flown before the first dollar was officially appropriated by Congress to study how to build it. That is a historical fact. Go look it up. Books have been written about this. And Ben Rich, who had been the head of Lockheed Skunk Works, told us, he took, you know,
Lockheed Skunk Works being the Edwards Air Force Base super secret development project.
Right, that's where the U-2 came from and all these things. And the head of Lockheed Skunk Works told us before he died, I have three different witnesses to this conversation, by the way. He said, you know, we already have the means to travel among the stars faster than the speed of light. He said that first. Secondly, he said, there are no private conversations anywhere on this planet. And the third thing he said was that anything you can imagine, think Star Wars, Star Trek, anything you can imagine, we have already done technologically at Skunk Works. He said, but it's a crime against humanity and a shame, because it would take an act of God to ever get it out to benefit the world. And what he was talking about was the fact that there are these enormous interests that don't want this out, because it would change so many aspects of how the world works. Now, what we're saying is that that transition of change should have started in the 50s, and that what we're talking about isn't visionary or fictitious or futuristic. We're trying to play catch-up so that we avert any further damage to the geopolitical situation we're in. Think oil wars, and think China moving into the oil and commodities markets, but also to try to prevent further degradation of our environment.
All right, the phone number, we're going to devote the rest of the show to your phone calls, 602-230-TALK. It is 602-230-8255 for Dr. Stephen Greer on the Charles Goyette Show. Let's go to the phones. It's Rob in Scottsdale this morning. Rob, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Charles. You're doing a great job with your show.
Thank you.
I have a question about whether the Disclosure Project is involved in the same campaign that the Enterprise mission is involved in also. That's the organization that Richard Hoagland is running. He's trying to get NASA to be more public about evidence that there was a former advanced civilization on Mars sometime in the distant past.
We certainly know about his work and have been supportive of this information being released. We don't work formally with that effort.
Uh-huh.
We're dealing more specifically with things that really involve the Earth and which are more imminent than perhaps the existence of ancient artifacts on another planet. Although I don't dismiss the importance of that from a scientific point of view, it's a very important question. I will say that I have had a JPL scientist tell me point blank that, yes, there are artificial structures, not of human origin, on Mars and also on parts of the moon. And the Disclosure Project has witnesses who, during the lunar orbiter period, had seen the images that came back that showed clearly artificial structures that were present before we went to the moon as humans, and that these were filtered through an NSA filtering facility that was at Langley, and this man was there personally and personally saw it, and he is one of our disclosure witnesses. We know that similar imaging and technology has come out of the Mars missions, and that those have similarly been held back through this process that has been going on for at least 40 or 50 years.
Yeah, it looks like there's a combination of more than one motive for carrying out cover-ups of all this stuff.
Oh, yes, I've just scratched the surface. I mean, one of them is religious. A lot of people have said, well, you know, what are the implications? I mean, if you believe the world is 6,000 years old or
yeah.
something, I don't mean to be too pointed here, but if you're of that ilk, some of this information would be rather disturbing to your orthodoxy. Now, I will say, you know, I had an interesting conversation with Monsignor Balducci at the Vatican a few years ago, and he was a chief theologian.
Wait a minute, what do they know about this stuff?
The Vatican knows a great deal. In fact, when Jimmy Carter became president, the CIA director, George Bush Sr., denied him this information in their first meeting. Carter asked for it. Bush said, I ain't going to give it to you. He said, go to the Congressional Research Service. He went there, and they said, well, we weren't really going to give you any of this either. And so a man I know who was with the Jesuit order in Washington was asked by the White House to ask the Vatican for information that they have in the Vatican Library. And the Vatican Library does have a secret component that has an enormous amount of this information. I've met with people who are at the Vatican, and I personally met with the chief astronomer for the Vatican Observatory, who's told me point blank they know that we're being visited by extraterrestrial civilizations. And Carter found out that the Vatican wouldn't give him any information either. There is an enormous connection to this subject and to the secrecy between certain entrenched religious groups and some of the sort of paramilitary and government groups out there. And it's a very strange group of bedfellows as you dig into this deeper and deeper.
Well, I'll tell you, thank you, Rob. I'll tell you something. The idea that the president, be it Carter or Clinton or Reagan, goes to the head of the CIA and he asks to be briefed on something, and he's not. This isn't an affront.
Well, of course, absolutely. This is one of the things that alarmed me the most. You know, my mother's family were some of the original founders of the United States. They fought in the American Revolution, were prisoner of war with the British. And we look at this, we look at the tradition of America, the true tradition of America, of a democracy, of an open society, and you see this kind of corrupt, rogue, powerful secrecy. It is anathema to the American way. And I tell people, I'm very patriotic. I am not anti-American at all. And yet, when people hear me talk, they say, well, gee, aren't you attacking? I said, no, I'm not attacking the military. I'm attacking the illegal aspects of the military.
How did you get interested in this stuff? How did you come to find yourself on this pathway?
Well, when I was a little boy, I was out with some buddies in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I grew up, and I saw one of these things in broad daylight. It was a disc-shaped silver object. It was silent, hovering, and as quickly as it was there, it just simply vanished.
Did your buddy see it?
Yes. And, of course, my parents said, yes, yes, dear, you know, of course. But I became so interested in this. I collected everything I could to look into it. And around that same time, remember, my uncle, in the mid-60s and late 60s, was the senior project engineer making the lunar module to take the first man to the moon. So I had this enormous interest in all of these things, and over the years I dug into it deeper and deeper and deeper and end up, well, here I am. But
all right, it's important to be talking about this business of secrecy and disclosure. Actually, today in Washington, D.C., the case of Sybil Edmonds, a whistleblower on some of the FBI business having to do with the 9/11 attack on America. Her case is being heard, and there's a gag order on her and state secrets and so on and so forth. What kind of consequences? I'm really interested in whistleblowers and what happens to them, Dr. Greer. What kind of consequences have people that have been whistleblowers for the Disclosure Project suffered, if indeed any?
Well, luckily at this point, none of them have suffered anything adverse, because before we went public with their names, we got enough people supporting this and knowing about what we were doing that it would, if they did that, it would have to happen with a billion-watt spotlight on them.
You got a critical mass.
Yes, we had a critical mass, and that's why it took from 1990 to 2001 to actually pop this thing public.
Now, are you getting encouragement from people inside the system that want you to keep the pressure on because it provides them maybe cover to tell even more?
Yes, and in fact, people have to understand that this is not a monolithic issue. There are people who are on the inside who desperately want to see it come out, but they feel themselves painted into a corner where they don't really know how to talk about it without the finger of blame being pointed back at them. And in many cases, they just inherited this mess from an earlier generation that got it going. So I have a lot of compassion for those folks and understand that in many respects, what we're doing is something they can't do. I had a former National Security Agency guy come to me and say, you know, I'm sort of jealous that you can speak about this and do what you're doing. Many of us want to see this happen, but we are really painted into a very black corner, and if we started talking about it, there'd be terrible repercussions for us. Some of the deeper insiders, Bill Colby, for example, who was a former CIA director, was going to transfer some hard technology to us, talking about actual materiel, back in the mid-90s, and the week he was going to meet with a member of our board of directors, they found him floating down the Potomac River.
Yeah, I remember
dead.
He was canoeing in his backyard.
That was a
or
hit.
Something.
That and absolutely was a
and
hit.
And he totally disappeared into the currents. Huh?
Correct. And the colonel who set up that meeting came to me and said they tried to make an example of Colby.
All right, 602-230-TALK. Back to the phones, Jesse in Phoenix. Jesse.
Hi, Charles. How are you?
Good, sir.
I just had a comment to the good doctor. Earlier, just about 5 minutes ago, I heard on the radio that you were saying, you know, we already have the technology to travel, you know, beyond the speed of light. And I find that stuff fascinating, you know, and everybody, I think, deep down wants that to be true. But, you know, when you say a statement like that, it's like, you know, I consider myself to be of a conservative mind, and I listen to Charles Goyette because I've been listening to you for a couple of years now, Charles, and when I hear statements like that, it's like it's no wonder that the Democrats can't get into office as far as the presidency is concerned, because every time you listen to one of your shows, the stuff just gets kind of kooky. So you have one day where you have really legitimate, you know, thought stuff, and then the next day it's
well, let's cut the chase and talk about the speed of light. I'm happy to do it, but I'll defer first to Dr. Greer.
Well, he's assuming that the speed of light is a fixed constant. It's been now shown it isn't. He's also assuming that you would do this with normal mass inertia, which you don't. And this is not kooky stuff. This is stuff that if you go into people who are doing work on a spin theory and a whole lot of other areas of physics in the mainstream are being discussed. What Ben Rich was talking about is that there had been advanced and clandestine research into this area where they already had that information, but that it wasn't going to be allowed out because of the interests that would be harmed if it was. Now, people say, oh, that's so crazy. Well, they think a lot of stuff is crazy until it actually gets proven. If somebody had written the script for 9/11 as a movie or a book with jets flying into World Trade Centers and both of them falling right one after another, everyone has said, oh, that's implausible, impossible. I will tell you that some of the strangest things are actually true, and the conventional wisdom that's being force-fed to folks like you, unfortunately, is a fiction. Much of what's been said in the world of physics and what's possible is, in fact, a fiction. And this can be proven. I recommend that you see read a book. It's about 1,000 pages long, the Colonel Tom Bearden, and he's a physicist, PhD, who's written a book called Energy from the Vacuum. And he goes into this issue of quantum vacuum space and these sorts of energy and propulsion systems, and it's an excellent, highly referenced scientific book.
Hey, Jesse, what we do on the show actually is a little bit different. I mean, I don't tell people what to think. I entertain all kinds of points of view.
Right.
And, I let you discern for yourself, and it's of no consequence to me whether you believe that the speed of light is a barrier to phenomena taking place, but you have to know that on the subatomic level, on the quantum level, I mean, the speed of light barrier doesn't make any sense.
Right. Well, and also, let me ask you this. Am I still on?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe in the near future, or maybe even now, or maybe even for the last couple of years, maybe they can send a particle or an ion in a lab, you know, faster than the speed of light. But, I mean, you know, what happens to the human body if, let's say, you go from here to Jupiter faster than the speed of light and you hit an asteroid on the way? I mean, that doesn't sound like a recipe for success. That sounds like a recipe for disaster.
It's a hairy crack-up. Yeah, it's mass times velocity squared, man. It's a big mess. Thank you very much, Jesse. We don't have to take a break, but I do want to spend some time on what is going to take place at Arizona State University on Saturday.
Well, actually, Friday night, I'm going to give a lecture. It's open to the public at Murdoch Lecture Hall. They said room 101, whatever that is. I have no idea where it is, but you guys here in Phoenix do.
I don't know where it is, but I'll be there.
We'll find it.
All right.
And basically, we're going to have at 6:30 an hour-long video of these military witnesses speaking. That is optional. People don't have to come to that if they don't have time. But then I will personally be speaking at 8 o'clock for a couple of hours. And then on Saturday, we're going to do a two-hour showing of this top-secret witness testimony from military and corporate people in the morning. And then all afternoon, I will be conducting a workshop where we'll go deeper into this for about 4 or 5 hours. And that will also be in the La Paz room at the ASU Memorial Union. So both these events are happening at ASU.
Okay. Now, what kind in this disclosure videos, what kind of people are we going to see? Are we going to see credentialed, credible people, or are we going to see the guard on the graveyard shift at the Navajo Army Depot outside Flying Stag?
Right, exactly. Every single one of these witnesses are people. We have their DD-214s. These are people who are military guys, mostly some intelligence officers. They go from brigadier generals to colonels and lieutenant colonels to astronauts who are in this material and in this video. So we're not talking low-level munchkins. We're talking people who, if they were to come forward with any other information, they'd be taken very seriously. One of the things that was pointed out by one of our witnesses, who's an Air Force pilot, who was in charge of worked in the Strategic Air Command, SAC, he said, you know, I had nuclear launch capability. I had top secret crypto SCI clearance. If I spoke about anything but this, it'd be taken very seriously. He says, but this is what I saw. This is what happened. So those are the kind of witnesses you're going to see. They're very, very strong.
All right, let's speculate for just a moment in the closing moments of our show what life might be like on this planet if some of the things that you suspect, some of the things that we might hear about in the Disclosure Project were manifest in terms of technology and energy and so on. How might life as we know it here on this planet change?
Well, the first thing that could happen is that within 5 years, we would be completely energy independent from the need for importing oil.
5 years?
5 years.
There's a lot of vehicles that need to be replaced.
Yes, but in 5 years, you could do enough to transition with these technologies so you would no longer be dependent on foreign oil. Number two, we would begin to heal the biosphere. The global warming, the loading of carbon dioxide and other pollutants would stop. And I believe that the Earth has its own, as an organism, looking at it medically as an organism, can kind of heal and correct a lot of the damage that's been done to the Earth over the last 100 years or so of industrial development. The other big thing that would happen is that people listening would no longer be paying $2,000 to $5,000 a year of their income for gas and oil and utilities. So you would have an enormous amount of economic activity to be freed up out of a very centralized energy sector into many other activities. And I think the most important change we would see is that the developing world, which is doing the most environmental damage right now, by the way, such as China, would be able to have a source of energy so that they could develop, alleviating much of the world's poverty without also destroying the Earth.
He's Dr. Stephen Greer. It is the Disclosure Project. You can find them on the Internet, disclosureproject.org. You can find directions and times and maps for this weekend's events at Arizona State University, disclosureproject.org. Friday evening, ASU Murdoch Lecture Hall, and then Saturday. And I'll see you there. Thank you, Dr. Stephen Greer.
Thank you.